The kings of Macedonia, Alexander the Great, the Battle of Arbela, Gaugamela, Part 1. Now, all the sources agree that the battle did not occur on the first day that the armies sighted each other. At almost 4 miles, each side would see no more than clouds of dust from the movement or a darker shade on the land. Patrols no doubt rode forward for a closer look, and at a little under a mile would be able to tell cavalry from infantry with confidence. The sheer size of Darius's host would have been obvious from the start. The strength of his cavalry, which formed the bulk of his first line, was apparent on closer inspection. Then there were the chariots and 15 Indian elephants, although in the event the latter would play little or no role in the fighting. Most of Alexander's officers were keen to press on an attack, full of confidence given that they had won every significant encounter with the Persians since the Battle of Granicus. Parmenio was the lone voice of caution, advising that they halt, reconnoiter, and this time the king agreed. They halted and made camp while Alexander took the companions and light troops to study the ground and the enemy. The plain was open, largely flat, and Darius's men had cleared wide stretches of any obstacle to make sure that his chariots would have a smooth run at the enemy. This and the Persian deployment made the essence of his plan obvious, for the prepared ground showed that Darius would wait for Alexander to come to him before launching a counterattack. Neither chariots nor cavalry were designed for static defense. With this great line of cavalry, he would aim to envelop the smaller Macedonian army. Horsemen, however brave, could not hope to break a phalanx from the front, let alone one armed with pikes, so the charge of heavy chariots was clearly meant to break up its ranks. Once scattered, the infantry would become highly vulnerable to the horsemen. There was nothing particularly subtle about the Persian plan, but it was sound and could easily work with their numbers. Alexander needed to negate the chariots and protect his flanks while still routing the enemy. When Alexander returned to camp, he once again summoned his officers and issued orders for the next day, explaining what he had in mind. Parmenio is now said to have urged a night attack to reduce the impact of numbers, but Alexander refused, saying he would not steal a victory. This was more like some other of the other stories we have encountered, although we need always to remind ourselves that the common thread is not that Parmenio was always wrong, but that Alexander was always right. In this case, Arrian himself, a former army commander, praised the decision, noting the confusion inherent in any night action as well as the political value of a clear triumph rather than a defeat, where Darius could blame Macedonian cunning and duplicity rather than their courage. He does claim that the Persians feared a night attack, so that most or all of the army stood at arms, or at least in position, overnight, making them far less fresh than the Macedonians. Highly unlikely are the stories of mass panic amongst the Macedonians and the role of Alexander spending the night performing sacrifices until both he and Aristander were satisfied with the omens, at which point the king fell into such a deep sleep that Parmenio had to shake him awake hours before the sun had risen. Indeed, at dawn on October the 1st, the Macedonians and their king paraded and marched out of camp. Alexander performed his usual morning sacrifice, and Callisthenes said that the king spoke to the Thessalians and other Greek allies, praying as the son of Zeus, that the gods would protect and strengthen them all. Aristander, robed in white and wearing a gold circlet, announced that he saw an eagle high overhead, the messenger of Zeus speeding at the enemy, who were thus bound to be defeated. Plutarch describes Alexander's costume on this day in great detail other than any other battle. He had a belted tunic from Sicily. He had a 2-layer linen corset captured at Issus. His iron helmet was carefully finished and then polished so it shone like silver, and his cloak was highly decorated, made some time ago by a famous craftsman and presented as a gift to him by Rhodes. The sword was another present, this time from the king of Citium in Cyprus, and was said to be finely tempered and beautifully balanced. During the marshalling of the forces and the preliminary advance, he rode a horse whose name has not been preserved, switching to Bucephalus immediately before the fighting, despite that his beloved companion was now well past his prime. Now, the Macedonians probably advanced for some distance in one or more columns before forming for battle. So that's Alexander, his men. So next time we'll look at the organization of Darius and get the numbers and positions and things so that we don't bog you down in all that information this time. Now, the sources for this, The Politics by Aristotle, The Histories by Herodotus, Histories, 12 volumes, by Diodorus Siculus, Peloponnesian War by Thucydides, and The Lives by Plutarch, Philip and Alexander, Kings and Conquerors by Goldsworthy, History of Macedonia, Volume 1 and Volume 2 by Hammond. In the Shadow of Olympus, The Emergence of Macedonia by Borgia. Some additional sources for the sections on Alexander rules would include, of course, Arians, The Campaigns of Alexander. In the Footsteps of Alexander the Great by Michael Wood. The Wars of Alexander the Great by Haeckel. And The Story of Alexander's Empire by Mahaffey. So I hope you enjoyed that. And as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, check out our merchandise, and if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.